Hey guys, welcome to the studio today. We are joined by former Air Force vet, Army vet, and Staff Sergeant Veronica Arquette-Stritt. Welcome to the studio, Veronica.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome. Yes. Super excited.
Happy to see you. You look amazing as always.
Thank you.
So good to catch up. I think the last time we caught up was back in, was it 2016, 17?
Maybe. I think Max was turning like one or two. Yeah. My nephew.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's great to see you.
I totally forgot that. It's been, oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's a whirlwind. So just to give the audience a little bit of context here, Veronica and I go way back to elementary school. Fast forward to high school, and let's play catch up.
All right.
Yes. So what have you been up to?
Oh, my gosh. So I guess we'd pick up, like, let's start where I graduated high
school.
So we both went to Milford High School, both had different endings on our Milford High School
experience.
History. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But I graduated. And I moved out. That's right. I remember my mom kind of the thing like, are you going to go to college? Are you going to get a full time? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you got to do something. And I'm just like, eh. Like, I know everything. Like, whatever. But I moved out. I was 17. Like, that was my goal, was to move out.
That's when I moved out.
Yeah. I was like, let's go. So I moved out, moved into an apartment when you could live in an apartment and split the bills and everything was, you still had money left over to eat. And then I got a job at Harmony House, which everybody remembers.
Yeah.
That was the cool music store in Commerce, right? Yeah, Commerce. Oh my gosh. So many good
memories. That takes me back.
So many good memories. And that was cool because that was still like, we're still switching from cassettes to CDs. CDs, vinyl was still popping. Like, you're always going to still sell that. But I mean, every night I felt like I was at a concert, like something.
Yeah.
Something was going on.
A lot of events.
Yeah, we have in-stores. You get free copies of CDs. Like, you just felt cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I remember coming up there to see you. Yeah, and we were both heavily into music from elementary all the way on.
Still, yes. Music is like huge. And
we always
I'm
had the
so
Walkman. Yep. I always had the boombox. I always had my boombox going to elementary
music.
School.
Always had music somehow, some way, even if it was like a crappy radio station. Something was always there. And still to this day. So Harmony House, I mean, it was so much fun. But I had that turning point where I was like, this isn't going to be forever. And my parents had moved to Texas. In that time frame, Jackie, my sister, had gone to Michigan State, so she's there. And I was like, I'm just going to go. So I asked my parents if I could move to Texas, and I did. Yeah, that was, talk about small town.
Yeah.
Moved to Cristobal, Texas. Very, very small town. Very small town. Super cool, though. I'm glad I experienced that. So I get to Texas.
Yeah.
I worked at a small store for like a year. Life not going anywhere, as usual. Like, whatever. And then one day I was like, what if I just join the military? What if I just go for 4 years? Get my, you know, a GI Bill, get a skill, do something. And I remember talking to my parents, and my dad was like, you are only allowed to join the Air Force or the Navy. You cannot even talk to the Marines or the Army. And I didn't, you know, I was like, okay. So,
right.
So I go and I talk to the Air Force, take the ASVAB, do decent. To this day, I still have a little regret about this. I walked in, and my recruiter's like, you did pretty decent. Like, here's all the medical positions that you could have. And I was like, I want to shoot guns, though. And he's like, nah. And he tried to sway me. And then there was a job, security forces, which is the military police in the Air Force world.
Wow.
So you will do law enforcement side of stuff, LED, but you'll also stand in front of a plane for 14 hours doing nothing, like in the heat. It was awful.
Yeah.
It was so boring.
Wow.
But that's what I made that decision. So I signed up. In that time, 9/11 had happened. Like, I had already signed up, and I remember kind of being like, oh, my gosh, this is real. Like, this is real. Like,
yeah.
I signed up not in wartime, you know, it's just garrison time. Like, nothing's going on. And I was like, all right, well, I already signed up. I can't back out. So I go to boot camp in San Antonio, Texas. And then I graduated boot camp. I'm all excited. Like, oh, it's done. And they put us in a bus. Like, right over a bridge. Here's your school.
What was boot camp like?
So boot camp, oh, my gosh. I go in June, I think, June, July, which is super hot and stupid to go to in San Antonio. Wake up call. I've never had anybody scream in my face like that or like tell you you're garbage or like whatever. And then, hey, we're going to go shoot M16s. You're going to pull apart a 249 and put it back together. And then I remember they're like, we're throwing grenades today or whatever. And I'm like, what if I throw it behind? Like, you just start thinking whatever.
Yeah.
But I made
anything could happen.
I never ran. I never cared about health. I never cared about being in shape. I think I started there like at 100.
Because you were just born hot, and that's a fact.
Clams to pull for cards. I remember getting there like 140 pounds, and then kind of got sickly, though. I got down to like 115, because you're not eating. You're scared to eat.
Right.
Nobody wants to go to the bathroom.
Right.
Like, it was just, it messes with your head.
Yeah.
That's what it was more of. And then once you get to the end, you're like, okay, I did it. But then you go to Security Forces school, and it was like going to another mini boot camp, because the ratio it felt like was like 20 dudes to one girl, like all the time. Like there was not that many of us over there. So that was crazy. And that's where all the weapons come into play. You learn how to be, well, you're in the Air Force. So like you're learning how to be like an airman first and know all the weapons and do all that. And then you still learn the law enforcement side too. Because once you get to your first base, you're going to have to arrest people and do all that stuff.
Yeah.
So graduated there. Here's the thing. At the end of it, I busted my foot. I fractured it in like four places. I didn't want to get washed back is what they called it. So I'd have to like stop, go get taken care of, and then come back and start again. So I just pushed through it. It was awful. I was so sick to my stomach. I remember going puking because it hurt so bad. And finally, they escorted me. The military police there escorted me because I wouldn't go. And they're like, your foot's fractured in like five spots. You have to go home and do nothing for 30 days. We only live like an hour and a half away. So my dad came and got me. I went home, did my time, came back, finished it up. So we're at the end, right? The last 2 weeks, graduating. And they're like, all right, everybody, here's your assignments. But they did it by flag. Like they showed you your flag of where you were going, whether it was state or other country. And mine popped up and I was like, what the hell is that? What the heck is that? They're like, you're going to Okinawa, Japan. And I was like, I'd never been out of the country either.
Dude, I remember this now because we were writing letters when you were in Japan.
Yeah,
yes.
I'd never been out of the country, never been on like a huge trip, never even been to like Cancun, like nothing like that.
Yeah.
So go home, get my stuff together, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the first journey.
That's exciting.
And that was the first time that I ever got on a plane not knowing what was going to be on the other side and being terrified.
Yeah.
Is somebody going to pick me up? Is somebody going to? And you get there and they're ready for you. You know, they got your name, your orders, whatever. And I get there and it was like, I remember we landed in South Korea first to drop off the first people and it was cold. And I was like, oh, this is going to suck. And then we get to Okinawa and it was like, the Hawaii of Japan.
Yeah.
It got there and it started. It just started from there. So
that is so cool. Yep. You know, I had a flashback while you were talking. You're like, I had never ran like getting through boot
camp.
But you're a dancer. I remember like coming up with you. You were always in different talent shows and you danced.
And I loved
avidly.
Dancing. And I kicked. That's one of the things I kicked. I wish I would have just kept dancing and doing it. But I don't know what happened. Like, you just kind of...
Well, you just fall off.
Yeah. I was like, I want to go see Nirvana instead.
Yes.
You know, like,
You were hardcore throughout elementary and I would say our junior high years. And
definitely. Like, I lived for, like, what were the talent shows and stuff like that. I just...
I remember you.
I remember dancing to Stacy Q, like two parts. Like I remember all of them.
Were great. That was so. That was probably a good lead in for you keeping in shape. Like that gave you some stamina to be able.
That
to
definitely
handle.
To this day flexibility.
Yeah.
I think I've kept it. And I still do yoga a lot now, but I think that
muscle
helped
memory.
A lot.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Definitely.
So boot camp survivor graduate and then
graduate get to Okinawa and then now I learned island life. Like, I had never known about island life. And I'm still young. I'm like 23. So I didn't take it for what it was. And I did take some of it in. But being in such a location was World War II.
Yeah.
Like, the history that was there of Okinawa. Amazing. Amazing. Beautiful place. The Okinawans were, they quickly reminded me they didn't want to be known as Japanese. They want to be known as Okinawans. Like, this is there. And I was like, okay, fair. You know, and I learned food. I learned chopsticks. I finally partook in seafood. I hated seafood. I wouldn't touch it. And then I got there and I'm like, oh, it's prepared this way. Like I learned that or whatever. The job was tough. It was like 6 days on, 1 day off, 5 days on, 2 days off. And so you had those days off. You better get your uniform and deal. If we had any training to do, you had to stay updated on your weapons. Like, so when you had time off, like you took it and drink beer. I mean, yeah, we drank a lot.
Right. Yeah. Because plus
too much.
We were young back then. So like that was what we did.
Oh yeah. So you could drink and like get up the next day and not like want to die.
Right.
So yeah. Now I'm like, I have half a beer and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Same.
Get my cane in 3 days.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I'll take a pass.
I don't even. Yeah. Oh my gosh. But yeah, I was there for my whole Air Force commitment the whole time. Yep. They kind of tried to persuade me to stay enlisted or to stay with the Air Force and the headquarters to Guam.
Wow.
And I sat there and I was like, but I don't want to do this job for 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm so tired. And I did. I got so much out of it. Like I studied hard. I became like law enforcement. I got to go work on that side because there was two sides. You had security and law enforcement. So many stories from that. But I think 20 years, like, and I saw the people around me that were married and had kids and it was rough on them. And I'm like, if I'm ever going to do anything like that, like this is not good. So they said no. So I was like, okay. So I got out. So I had a break in service. I went home. Jackie, my sister, was living in Bath, Michigan, and she let me come live with her, got out. But I remember 8 months went by. I was kind of working like some part-time. I was like, I'm not ready just to be back in the civilian world. So I called the Army recruiter, and they were just like, sure, what do you want?
Man.
They didn't care.
Wow.
They're like, you want to stay military police? We'll send you wherever you want right now. And I was like, no, no. Army, like military police, light infantry for women. I knew better.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just want to do paperwork. And they're like, how about human resources? I'm like, sold.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
So that was
what was the stretch for the Air Force? What was the time lapse for that? Was that a good decade?
So like after the Air Force, before I went into the Army?
Yeah.
Or how long? What do you mean? Like, so I was in for 4 years for the Air Force.
Okay.
Went home for like 8 months.
Then
I was gone like 2 months after that.
Got
So like a year I had break, which was nice too. I mean, I got to spend time with my sister and kind of see what I didn't want to do anymore. I saw people struggling again. And I just, I wanted more. I still wanted to travel and like on the government's dime. So I was like, I'm going to do this. And I signed up for the Army. 3 months later, they're like, when do you want to leave? And I did, but I didn't have to go to Army boot camp. I went to Army Consolidated Boot Camp at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico.
Okay.
Beautiful. Didn't see any aliens, but beautiful. Super cool. I went there with prior Navy, prior Marine, prior Air Force. We all went there to kind of get a quick, like, boom, here's your Army history. This is what you should learn. Rank, uniform. I didn't learn anything. Like, because it was just, it was only a month.
Wow.
And then, boom, I shot over to South Carolina from my school. Once again, they were like, does anybody want to volunteer for assignments? And I'm like, for what? And they're like, South Korea. And I'm like, okay. Boom, got it. So 4 months later, I was in South Korea. I was in Seoul. That's where I lived at. Like, yeah, like right there in the big city and everything. So.
Wow.
Yep, got there. But this time, when I got in the plane to fly over there, I wasn't scared. I was like, I've already done this. I'm like, somebody will pick us up.
You're
everything
seasoned.
Will be fine. Yeah, yeah, and it was. It was fine. And that was another place full of history, like the Korean War and learning all that. And that was, that
so
was
you've gotten
wild.
To see a lot, travel, learn so much.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And I still wish I would have taken so much more in, but I'm really grateful for what I did.
It's weird when you're experiencing something as amazing as that and take it all in while you're experiencing it. It's like only you only know how amazing it is when you're reflecting.
Exactly. Yeah. And I wish, like in the last, I would say good 10 years of my life, I've definitely practiced mindfulness.
Yeah.
Like I'll be sitting in a moment, just like even if it's with my dog, I'm like, I want to remember this. I'm going to remember this moment with you. And like, I try so hard. You may not remember everything.
I know. I'm there. I'm doing it too.
I
do it all the time.
So hard.
Yeah. There's been so many great experiences. Yeah. Now you met your husband.
Yeah. We're coming up to that.
Yes.
So, South Korea. I'm at the end of the tour there. I spent 2 years in South Korea and they're like, I knew they were going to get me because I've been like gone, like on good assignments. They're like, okay, here's your assignment. And I'm like, Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I was like,
ugh. Right.
I never wanted a zip code in the South ever.
Yeah.
That changed a lot.
Right.
So I go home on leave, pack up my car. My parents had held my car, you know, for a couple years and she's my little Malibu still ready to be kicking, packed it up, drove down to Fort Campbell. I didn't know what I was driving into or going. That was a wake-up call. This is the Army. This is the real Army, 101st Airborne Division. So I get there. They're like, you're assigned to 3rd Brigade Combat Team, or 3 STB at that time, the Rakasans. What the hell's a Rakasan? You know, I'm learning all this. So I come to find out Rakasan means falling umbrella in Japanese, and that's what they would call us in World War II as people were parachuting in into Japan. They'd be like, oh, the Rakasans. You know, like it was falling man in parachute. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And then the Tori is like the emblem for 3rd Brigade. I get there and it was boots on the ground. Like they're like, okay, we'll be ready Thursday. Have your ruck. We're doing the first 12-mile ruck march. And I'm just like, ah, it was a wake up call. And that was the Army. Like every Monday was like 8-mile run, whatever. And my body, that's when my body slowly started like just shifting. The weight, the running, my hips, like which I'm dealing with now, like everything started shifting. But they're like, well, surprise, you guys be ready. You're leaving the first week in January for Afghanistan. So here's that. Here's the build up to that. So this is my first deployment, my real first deployment. I'm like, okay, I'm going to learn as much as I can. I'm an E5 at that point, a sergeant. So I have soldiers underneath me. Human resources, that's still my job, but you're a soldier first. So they're preparing us, like getting us ready. They couldn't have prepared me for that. This is 2010 we went. This is like the deadliest year for that war in Afghanistan. I was not prepared for anything, but I feel like unless you're like the seasoned infantrymen, like those guys, like special forces, which I love them all so much. I respect them so much. Like I didn't know what to expect. So I don't know. Do you want me to go into that?
Go into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I also disclaimer, like if anybody's listening to this that was in the military, please know this is my story.
Yeah.
This is my reflection. This is what I saw and what I dealt with. It's in no way to put down anybody else's, because we all experience different things, different jobs, different locations, different places in Afghanistan. So I got there. earlier. They sent us earlier than the whole brigade. It was all of 3rd Brigades going. So we got there probably about, I'd say, a month before everybody else did. So we're boots on ground. It's me and like 4 other soldiers, and our job is to get everybody in country and pushed out to where they need to be. So there's little FOBs forward operating bases, and they're just like small areas like throughout Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And then I'm at Bagram. Bagram, unfortunately for everybody, like to like make a connection, is when we just did that pullout of Afghanistan where everything just came out really fast. That was Bagram. So we do all that. Everybody starts coming in, right? And we're getting this brigade that was there before us was from Alaska. Crazy story. When we got there, the first thing we were taught about was, I cannot remember the soldier's name. He had walked off his base and people were looking for him. I can't remember his name. It'll come to me. But that was our first introduction. Hey, so-and-so walked off base on his own accord. We're still looking for him. And wow. The Taliban got him. So wow. He was there for a long time. He was just released like 3 or 4 years ago. So that was my first thing. And I'm like, whoa, like this is a lot. Everybody starts coming into country on these different planes. They're coming in. We're up for 20. I stayed up for 3 days straight once. I didn't know you could physically do that. Yeah. I was hallucinating. Like, it was crazy. Everybody's in. Pushed out to where they need to be. Got everybody where we need to be, and then it just starts. I crap you not. It was like the first 2 weeks we were there, they were like, we'd get woken up. They'd be like, it would either be WIA or KIA. That would be your knock. And they were like, WIA, wounded in action or killed in action. WIAs, they'd come in. They'd be like, okay, they're assigned to your unit. You guys got to go over. So the hospital's right next to us, too. We heard everything all the time. So we'd go over there, check on them, and some of them are in pretty rough shape, just make sure they had everything they needed to go, because now they're going to take flights into Landstuhl. I think that's how I said Germany. Great medical care there. And then they'd go on to the States. But then if we got a KIA knock, go, okay, who is it? Get their paperwork together. And then we'd wait for the body to arrive. And then we'd go out to the flight line. They called them hero flights. We'd line up with our weapons and like you salute, and then the casket goes by, and then they go home. So that was like
a lot.
I can't speak
in.
For my other soldiers that were with me, but it just seemed like to me it felt like it was every week. I mean, we're talking like 2, 3. We had 7 at one time. Like that messed with my head so much. Oh my gosh. Cause like, you know, war is death. Like you're going to see death. And I saw more than I ever want to see again in my life. And so we're dealing with this. In that time, out in the mountain area, I can't remember the region, but there was a earthquake landslide, and it took out some villages that were out there, so they brought them on base. And I was like, it was one of those moments where I saw these kids getting off the bus, and I had my weapon, and they're like looking at me scared, and I'm looking at them like, oh my God. So I try to put my weapon behind me, you know. Yeah. They're seeing like probably an American for the first time. And we also had to help with a lot of people died in that landslide. So they turned the airport into like the little airport we had into like a makeshift morgue. And so we kind of had to help with that too. So that, and this is my first death, anything, yeah. Bodies, like it was just, man, it was wow. Heavy. It was really, really heavy. And so, oh my gosh, like the whole year was just spent. I felt like it was just death, 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 death. And I just wanted to get home.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make it. And we had some close calls with incomings, and you can hear them. That's why I don't like that firework now. That's like, I hate those fireworks, but
yeah,
I get over it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Because you'd hear it, and everybody just falls in place. It didn't matter where you're at. You just fall to the ground and, like, hope it's going to go out, like, by you. So fast forward through all that. God, that's the first time I've really said that out loud to anybody.
Thank you for sharing
that.
Yeah,
to anybody. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, this is the first time I've talked about it in a public setting.
Yeah,
so,
I really appreciate that.
Gosh, it makes my heart, like,
yeah.
Okay. So some months down the road, this is going to be a rough one, but I'm going to get through this. So it was November 2010. One of our soldiers, Andrew, he was a military police soldier assigned to us. They were out at a forward operating base that was a lot smaller. He hurt his wrist. He fell off this thing, hurt his wrist. I remember him coming into the hospital. I was like, yo, dude. I was like, we got like 3 months left. I'm like, go home. Go home. Do not come back. And I remember him laughing, being like, yeah, yeah. Month later, this turd is back. And I was like, Andrew, I remember like, because I had to bring him back in, get his paperwork or whatever. And he was like, yeah, I knew he was going to come back. That's all of us, though. That's yeah. Any of us. We would probably go home, get better, and come back. So he comes back, push him out. He gets back to his fob. And I crap you not, it felt like 3 weeks later, he was like in the casket to go home.
Oh.
And I just, I always kicked myself for that. There's nothing I could do. I know now, none of us. I mean, he was going to come back no matter what. That's just what we do. But it just broke my heart. It was just like this turn so fast, you know? And he went home. And in that time, my husband, who I kind of knew who he was, he had been home on leave. So he's already in the States. So Andrew's body had to go home, and they got a hold of Jared back in the States, like, hey, can you escort him home? And he did.
Wow.
So he took time from his leave. He left his family, and they understood too. My in-laws are amazing. And he escorted Andrew's body home to Maine. He's buried in Maine, and got him home. Yeah.
Wow.
And Andrew at that time, his wife was pregnant. It's good to see his daughter growing up. She's so old now. It's just hard.
Yeah.
And I know we all go through it. Like, we've lost so many friends, and Andrew's not the only person that, you know, I've lost in war, and it just sucks.
And but life, grief.
But we all, it's grief. Yeah. We've all known. And I've come so far since then too. Like, I finally, in the last like 4 years of my life, started talking to somebody.
Yeah.
And it's made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Like, everything that you've kept inside that you're just like, no, I can deal with this. I can deal with this. No,
I've
I can't
the
deal
same
with
thing.
That. Yeah.
We're in the same
like,
boat.
Nobody wants to hear my crap.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Nobody understands. They weren't there. No, people do care.
It does help to talk.
It has helped so much. Like, I still have bad nightmares. I feel like PTSD is so different for everybody. Mine is noises. When I came home from Afghanistan, I put a piece of tape over my doorbell. I couldn't hear the doorbell because I would drop things and I would like freak out, balloons popping.
Yeah.
Oh my
you just
want
to quiet the noise.
I just, yeah, I want
I get
it,
that.
I want it silence.
Yeah.
I want it silence.
Peace.
But with my husband, so he got Andrew home. He came back into country, Jared did, and I had to do his paperwork. And I remember thinking, like, this guy's kind of cute. I was like, he's probably married or whatever. I'm single too, whatever. And we just started talking, and we never stopped talking. And that's been since then. You know, since
I love it.
Yeah. And
we've kept in touch over the years, and you've always spoke so highly of your husband.
Oh, my gosh. I love him so much. Like, of course, we had bumps in the beginning, not because of him. And I will say that fully, like, me. Like, I never thought I was going to get married. I never wanted to have kids. Like, I don't know if it was, like, an independent streak always.
Yeah.
I don't need anybody. The military gave me my career, like, whatever. But then I met Jared. He's the nicest. Calmest, like, he keeps me sane.
Yeah.
Like,
and they say opposites attract.
Yes, and
right?
They do. They do. We are so opposite. He's country. I'm rock and roll. Like, totally. And now I love it. In the beginning, I remember thinking, like, this isn't gonna work. Like, now it's just, I love it so much.
And just to give the audience a little bit of context here, everybody is in love with Veronica. So guy, girl, didn't matter. She was the homecoming queen. Everybody loves Veronica.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
yes.
Oh my gosh. I have my homecoming dress. I pulled it out the other day because I was going to use it for the zombie prom for our Ruby team. And I put it on. And I was like, I can still wear it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what a weird time, man. How did I become homecoming queen?
Dude.
That was crazy.
You were gorgeous. I remember. That
thank
time.
You.
Yes, of course.
That was crazy.
There was no other choice. Everyone
I remember
voted
somebody
for
there
you.
Like, we counted them. You won by a landslide. I can't remember who told
bullshit.
Me that. They were like kind of like snooty with me about it.
Yeah.
I didn't really care about this. This is
I knew
my,
you, everyone knew you didn't
thing.
Care either because that's not your thing.
No,
and it was like there. But for everybody that was vote, anybody that bothered to vote, you were in it, and it was
like
there
was
no other choice.
The underdogs, like hey,
hell no, you're gorgeous.
Girl,
you're still gorgeous. I'm not shocked that your homecoming dress still fits. I love it. That is so good, and I'm so happy that you found Jared. And we've corresponded over the years, and I remember you telling. Kind of explaining the dynamic of your relationship and how you guys are kind of opposites, but it balances out. You guys balance out each other. And,
oh my gosh. And sometimes it doesn't work for everybody, and I can see that. But once I just started to grow up more in my own head and understand things and not be so like, you know what I mean? Like
everything's not so rigid.
Yeah.
And there's not, everyone doesn't follow the same blueprint.
I thought it was.
You write
your
own blueprint.
Yeah. I thought this is how it's supposed to be. No, I'm going to live in a flat by myself with my cats and I'm going to be, you know, I don't know. And then everything changed.
Yeah.
And it's so cool now.
That's awesome.
Like it's awesome now.
And you write your own blueprint and you get there when you get there, I think. And you and I talked a little bit off camera about just the high school experience and everybody had their own take and perspective on what that was like. And then kind of, you know, growing up in our town, some people just had a different blueprint where it was go to college, get married, have the three kids, do the thing and like follow that blueprint. But that was definitely not for you. It was definitely not for me. It was definitely not for a lot of folks. We know some folks, didn't make it out of that town alive.
Yeah.
You know, we experienced that.
We know some people. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, our, from a young age, we saw death. mm-hmm. I think, a lot in that town.
We were touched by a lot of things that I just didn't remember until, like, you unlock that part of your brain. Like, oh, my gosh, bless her heart. Like, Cynthia Jones.
Yeah.
Like, when I started going into, like, some, like, historical research for a true crime thing I was helping with, I was like, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
And like, and it
that one recently resurfaced for me, too.
Wow.
And, yeah, there's just a lot of things that I tap back into. And I was like, wow, we really processed a lot of grief unknowingly.
Yes.
You know, at a young age.
And how to.
Yeah.
Like, suicide. Huge.
We had some pretty gory suicides throughout our high school years, too. That was really unfortunate. And then just some really unfortunate, unexpected accidents.
I feel like there's a lot of vehicle accidents. I don't know why. But,
yes.
I remember being killed, not even them being the drunk drivers, like them being hit by drunk drivers.
Yeah.
Like,
just as a pedestrian, I remember a few folks.
I was thinking about, did you ever know Aaron Cohn?
Yeah.
I think that was his name. Cope? No, Aaron Cope. I apologize. I hope I get that right. I can still see his face and I can hear his voice.
I know who you're talking
about.
He had
cancer.
Yeah.
And I remember him having it and then he was gone, like gone.
Yeah.
And that was my like, oh my gosh, like you can be gone so fast.
Yeah.
I always think about these people. So I hope they're never forgotten.
I know.
And I always think about
these too. People pop up, a memory happens. And, you know, I'm sure you've experienced this just with all of your background in the military and in service. You can't control a thought coming into your head at night. So it's like I get like quiet the noise. Yep. It was like I experienced the loss of my brother. He died when he was just 27. I had to plan his funeral. You know, my parents were incapacitated. They couldn't do it.
Right.
And so and my other brother was in prison at the time. So it was like all that fell on me.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was. I'd never experienced that before.
Because and you're still processing as well. But now you've got to take care of the meat and potatoes of everything, too.
Like, it was interesting.
That's double.
It's a lot. And it's just like processing that sometimes, like even years later, you lay your head down on the pillow at night and it's like you don't know how to quiet the noise because you don't have control of a thought. You know, people talk a lot about closure and it's like, how do you find closure in something like
that?
I don't believe in closure either.
Yeah,
I'm like, grief is an ever evolving process and it looks different every day. I think I used to say every year when it, like the anniversary of my brother's death would come up or his birthday or someone else that I loved and lost, would come up. But I think like it's daily because I constantly think about friends that we've lost over the years and you flash back and sometimes a stretch of years will go by and that person doesn't pop up, you know, for years. And then all of a sudden, bam, I'm
going
to think about so-and-so today.
Yep.
And like, it's a rough day.
Yep. And you're so right about the thought process. That's where my, it's not so much, I don't want to say demon, but that's my problem, sleep.
Yeah.
My dreams, like, I'll be fine for 1 week, and then for a week I'm not sleeping. My husband's had to shake me up because, like, I go into that dream mode where I'm trying to scream and get away from something, and I can't.
Right.
Somebody pops up that's passed away, and I'm talking to them, and I'm like, where are you? Like, where I try to touch them, and I can't. Like,
yeah.
It's wild.
It's a process.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
It's like.
And like what you said with grief, I don't believe in closure. I know it could be different
either.
For everybody.
It is.
When the farther you get away from an event, just like history, the farther you get away from World War II or Pearl Harbor, 9/11, you don't have as much connection to it. We always will, you know, but I understand the younger generation doesn't or may not. The farther we get away from someone passing away, I always wonder, like, is it going to get easier and easier? And I don't know because it's good some
that's
days
a good point.
And then
some days it's not.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that it is.
And some days you're just like,
you just
need
have
a day.
To take it day by day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it for me too. And like I said, if you're looking for closure and you're able to, you know, make that happen for yourself, everyone has a different experience or a different take. For me, I was just trying to figure out how to find some peace and let go of the thought of finding closure. So it was more about letting go for me. It's like, okay, and just accepting that that happened. They're not coming back, right? And then just kind of like dealing with those thoughts on a daily basis when they're coming. Sometimes, you know, when it rains, it pours. Other times it's like a good stretch. Sometimes a thought or an anniversary comes up and you're like, it's a happy day. It's like happy, happy memories.
Right.
And then other days it's like grief stricken, you know, it's just a process.
I call it like the emotional cake. Like,
yes.
It's
layers.
Okay. And like you might be eating this piece of cake and then, you know, you're thinking about your brother and then you're like, well, what would have been this? What we could have done this. And like you just go. Into,
I do
like,
it all the time.
You go into like the spiral.
Yeah.
And you don't do it on purpose. It's
no.
just like you said, it's just our brain. It's our psyche. It's just how it goes. And,
yep.
And how we process it now, though, because there's no closure. sometimes I believe in acceptance, but I believe in acceptance of a reality situation, like your brother is gone,
right,
physically gone from this earth. But now what do I do with that? Like, what else can I start? It's hard. And
it's weird so hard too, because you would think you become numb to it at some point. Like you said, it was almost like a weekly basis for you to see these caskets. And it was like,
you would think some people do. And that's scary too. I think about, for me, it was just
the first time, every time.
Week. Yeah.
Like, I've lost so many people that you would think like, okay, you're just used to that process. But really, just with the loss of my dog recently, I'm still going through the grief process. And with as much grief and loss as I've experienced, I know how that looks. And I am guilty of trying to rush that process. This last time I was like, what are you doing? You know what that process is like. It has to happen. Your body experiences that organically. And my body will tell me when I'm like ready to get back to doing a podcast or getting back to my normal day, my typical day. It wasn't like that for a long time, and I kept trying to rush that process. I was still getting up at 2 a.m. to go to the gym, and I wouldn't do anything. I would sit there and then my body wouldn't work.
Yep.
It wouldn't do it. I was like, this is weird.
It's a shutdown.
And it was shutting down. And I was like, listen to your body, you fool. Like, you know what the process is.
I think we should acknowledge that. I think it's so important that people watching this, like, we understand the loss of a pet.
Yeah.
Like, it digs at you, and it can be as the equivalent of losing a human in your life. And I have always told everybody, like, you lost Frankie, and when I lost Leroy, I was screwed up. I cried for him every night. Like, and then as time has gotten away and I went and got Waylon, I knew that I got to keep going.
Yeah. You know?
But that just that's huge.
Yeah.
And that's a process.
It is.
And it did. It made me I was like, I don't even want to go walk anymore. I don't want to see other people with their dogs. I don't want to see anybody happy. But I needed to do that.
Yeah.
I needed to be mad at everything for at least a week. And then I could come back.
I was.
And you do. You feel like.
I was thankful that I had Ziggy, because I would get up. He made me get up.
Yeah.
So I would take him for a Jeep ride every day. And so my grief process with different experiences looks different in every way. And so for Frankie, it was a lot of cheeseburgers and a lot of sleep and a lot of sobbing.
And hey,
it was. Yep. And so Ziggy got my ass up to take him for a ride, and I had to at least do that.
Yeah.
Because he deserved to.
That's so crazy you said that, because we still had Abraham, and I was like, okay, buddy.
That was the only thing that got me out of bed.
Yeah, because I was like, you still have another kid to go. We can do this.
I would take him jeeping, and we would go through the McDonald's drive-thru, Mickey D's, and I would get a couple double quarter pounders with cheese, because that's what time it was. And that's what I did. I ate cheeseburgers, and I did my process, and did not work out. And I didn't podcast. I couldn't podcast because I was on a good roll, right? And then it seems like every time you get a little progress with something, or you feel like things are going good and you get a little bit ahead, you know, bam, someone dies.
Yep.
It's like, it never fails.
Yes. Like, you're like, okay, I'm in a good place. Oh crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think everybody experiences that too. Like, even financially, emotionally, you're like, okay. Like, I'm doing good. Bam. Kids need their teeth done.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's all your thousands.
That's why I started training. Like, I know you're still, and you got yourself involved in different things like roller derby. Mm-hmm. You're a huge animal advocate, which I love. We have that in common. And I know you're very passionate about roller derby, but those were the things, that's how I found my way into jiu-jitsu, was trying to combat the noise.
Yeah.
When I can't totally shut the noise off. And I was like, what can I get myself involved in? Like, working out just wasn't enough for me anymore. I was like, I want to learn, but I want to learn on a deeper level, and I want to be passionate about something.
I totally agree.
And so I found my way to martial arts, but I always respected your passion for the roller derby, because you weren't it just wasn't like something that you were doing to look cool. It was like, you were into that.
I loved it. I started in Missouri. And I full disclosure, I call myself the most okayest skater possible. I am not great. I am not good, but I have so much fun.
Yeah.
And it was it was exercise. Like, it was such good exercise. And then in Missouri I started, but I was so scared too. I was like, these girls are gonna beat the crap out of me. Like, there's no way. But then you learn.
Right.
But you also have to accept learning. And that was another thing that I learned, I just learned at my own rate. Like, when you're young, you're like, why can't I get this? Like, why can't I? Like, this time, you know, older, I was in my 30s.
Yeah.
Like, I was like,
I love it though, because I was in my 40s with jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think I had just turned 42 or 43. And I was like,
you just adapt better older. You take in learning better.
Yes, exactly.
Like criticism better. You're not like, oh, it's personal. They hate me. You're like, no, I need to learn to do this better to be safe.
Yeah. Everything. And everyone wants to, it's different because it's not people rooting against you. Right.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
like that's its own community yep. and its own family, much mm-hmm. like jiu-jitsu. It's like everyone's trying to take each other to the next level. And so yeah. like with that, with your roller derby, like that was a family for you.
It was. It was a break. It was my thing.
Yeah.
You know, my poor husband had to deal with my brain all the time. I needed to do my thing.
Yeah.
And that started just skating. And then, like, we left Missouri. Oh, yeah, we've moved a million times, too. So we lived in Missouri, and then we moved to Louisiana. And then I found that team there and then kept going. And then now we're in Clarksville, Tennessee. And
you've been in Tennessee for a minute now, right?
Yeah, we moved in the middle of 2020.
Yeah.
We got back there. But when I was at Fort Campbell that first time when I was still active duty, that was Clarksville. We met there.
Yeah.
I never thought we'd be back there. I never wanted to go back to Clarksville, Tennessee. Ugh. But here we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I came back. But this time around with roller derby, I'm so broken from the military, like everything. My shoulder has just been the downfall of me for years and years. And good old military doctors, no offense, everybody, but we all know. Just every time I'd go, they'd be like, you have snapping scapula, you have nerves in your arm. And I would follow through and like, before in the military, they were quick about like, here's a pain pill, this will help you. Then it was naproxen. And it was just, nothing was working.
Yeah.
So this time, 2020, we come back to Clarksville. I'm not taking care of my dad yet at this time. I'm just like, okay, I need to get myself fixed. I start going to see a doctor, young surgeon, shoulder surgeon. And he was like, he did all the MRIs. He's like, yo, you have a tear that's like all the way down. Like, he's like, are you okay? And I was like, no.
Right.
And he's like, we need to talk. And it was like the first acknowledgement of, oh my, I'm not crazy. Like, he's like, this looks like it's just an old scar that keeps healing, tearing, healing. He's like, you work out. I'm like, yeah. And I was like, I started lifting weights. And he's like, stop. Yeah. But I got fixed. Like, there's still things that are bad back there that are not good. But it took that long to get fixed. So when I came back to roller derby in Clarksville, I met my great friend, Marie. I love her so much. I told her, I was like, I'll come help with roller derby. I'll help fresh meat, which is the new people that come in.
Yeah.
I was like, but I can't play the game anymore. I can't hit. I can't take anything. I got to get better. And they were like, okay. And so I've been with them ever since.
Amazing.
We just had so much fun.
I helped
the new group that had come in last time, the fresh meat skaters. Like, I'd helped them learn what they needed to know. But they are amazing. I wish I could
see, but that's what I love about you with your commitment to the roller derby. Like, you talk about yourself like I talk about myself. I undersell it, and I'm the okayest at whatever. But, like, that's you're passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And, like, now you get to be a mentor to the fresh meat,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I tell them the things that I wish somebody maybe when I started at Missouri would have told me, like, hey, go at your own pace.
Yeah.
Your family is going to come first. Take care of stuff that's going on at home. Skating's always going to be here. You know, you commit what you can and you figure this out. Like, and learn slowly. Everybody's not going to get it the same way. Like, prior ice skaters that come in are flying circles around all of us.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have that background, it's going to be different.
Right.
But don't get down on yourself. Like, yeah. I wish people would have told us more of that growing up, you know, like, hey, it didn't work out. All right, you're not meant to be. Go be an alligator wrestler.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
give it a shot.
And people would have said more stuff like that to us. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is, but after we leave Clarksville, I think we're moving to Illinois. I think that's Jared's retiring.
Wow.
Is this closer
to your sister then?
Yeah, closer to Jackie and my nephew.
Well, I know you love your sister.
Yeah,
you love your nephew.
We're like those weird best friend sisters.
Yes.
We still argue and we still have our little tiny spats, but it's nothing.
Of course.
Like, we instantly go, nope.
I love your tradition of Riot Fest every year because you guys are both hardcore rockers.
And then Jared with this last year.
Yes, that's amazing. I was just rocking out to Tool this morning
in my garage gym.
Yeah, so I thought about you.
Every year we go though, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
It's like 3 days. I'm like, I'm old.
Yeah.
I'm tired. This last time I drank like the first day. The second day I really didn't drink because that Sunday we were going to see Kat Von D to meet Kat Von
yes.
D. And I was like, I gotta look good. Like,
yeah.
But I was just still like, I'm so tired.
Right.
And my sister, though, she is such a badass.
She's running marathons.
She's running marathons.
Yeah.
She is a mom. She is just such an intense, cool person. She's my hero.
Yeah.
Like, she is and people are like, who? I was like, my sister is just so cool.
I love that you guys are each other's biggest fan.
Yeah.
Like, biggest supporter.
But we made a decision a long time, years ago, that we would tell each other, like, you're being crazy.
Yeah.
You're being plastic.
Yeah.
Like, we always, I forgot what that's from, but you're being plastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And we do that. Like, calm down. Like, I always think if we ever are going to get an argument, I'm like, not worth it. She could be gone tomorrow. Not worth it.
Yeah.
Not worth it. And that's how I look at everything now. Anybody has a problem with me, anybody has a with everything, I'm just like, not worth it. Yeah. Like, I hope you do okay. I want you to be okay in life, but this is not the energy I want.
No, I'm so, yeah. I'm sure you're in the same boat as me as far as being protective of your energy. Mm-hmm. It's like, I got no time for any of that stuff. Moving forward, moving on.
Yep.
Exactly.
Like, I personally know things, but I'm like, it doesn't even bother me. Nothing bothers me anymore because I'm just like,
it's a great place to be.
Yeah, that took a long time. I mean, I'm 47. It takes a long time to get there. Yeah. But it's such
and then
a,
you have to maintain it.
It's such like, a cool feeling it now. Is. I'll be like, I'll be like, if this is not going to make things better in my life, I'm not going to partake in it. I am not victim mentality. I am not, there is nothing. Nobody owes me anything.
With everything that we've experienced, I mean, everyone experiences just life at a different rate and a different pace. Yep. But everything that we've been through since we've known each other as youngsters, you know, there's so many different alternatives now for dealing with things. I know I just kind of fell away from drinking and self-medicating that. It just isn't for me, and alcohol is such a depressant. Like, it's not a thing for me. I'm happy to enjoy a cocktail if it's time to do
too.
That. Yeah. But, like, it's not a thing. I can take it or leave it, and it's not something that's part of my lifestyle.
Yeah,
Right.
I did my Courtney Love time. I think we both did.
Exactly. Like, we both did. I had my heyday for everybody. Yeah, for sure. So I definitely did that. But like, I also found my way into different things, like just quieting the noise, like CBD. Like,
have you ever tried
CBD? I found my way into my body aches were so bad. I had a couple of injuries and different things I used to work with young men with intermittent explosive disorder with the diagnosis of schizophrenia so people being released from the institutions, and it was very combative. Oh my gosh. And so my body's taken a beating a time or two, and just different things like that, and working out, and life happens. Mm-hmm. And I started using like roll-on CBD like on my joints, and you know, different things like that. Yeah, just different things like that, because I was watching a lot of people who have experienced different situations, and a lot of people, you know, get out of the military and find their way to the bottle, which is tough.
Lots
because
of them. I still have friends.
It's so hard to watch
between that and drugs.
Yeah,
like, yeah, it's
because
it's
you can't get
really,
away. You're trying to quiet
and then
the
you
noise.
Don't, like whether it be military or whatever trauma that you're trying to deal with, and medicating it with alcohol and many things, because we've all been there. I'm guilty of it too.
Me too.
It's just not a good place.
No.
And like you said, it's a depressant. So it's just going
to. It's hard to get out of
down.
That rabbit
it's
hole.
It's going to take you down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to want to get out of that rabbit hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally. And like you said, I'll have a drink here and there.
Sure.
Yeah. That's nice. But my end goal is not. I want to wake up the next morning and go for a walk.
Yes.
Or work out. Or like
I can't
whatever.
Do anything that's going to set me back.
Yeah. And I don't know about you. If I have a couple of drinks, I'll be like, okay. I'll be like, if I start drinking water now, I'll be like, so it's not like, it's not part of my life anymore.
Me too. Because I'm like, if I have to do that much, if I have to go that deep into it.
If I don't got to do something the next day, I'm like,
right.
I'm like, I'll drive everybody. I'll drive everybody home.
Yes. You were kind of like that in high school too. Weren't you always the DD? Were you more... a little more together than most of the rest of the messes.
I don't know. Like, I look back, and that's what we talked about. Everybody's experience is different. I don't know if I want to. Like, I want to ask people, like, what do you remember?
What was your
of
perception?
That time? You know, and I still talk to Mark all the time, and he gives me his perception of things.
Yeah.
My sister was a little bit younger, and she's got some perception, but I don't know. Like, I feel like we had a good time, and it was fun. My friend Jody was always around. Anne.
Yeah.
Like, Anne was always around. Like, I don't know. Like,
I had too good a time
like,
back then.
Yeah,
I know, for me, I was like, shit, I don't need to know anyone's perceptions because I know what it is. I know what time it is.
Like, you are a monster.
Yeah. Oh my God. But we live to tell.
Like, we are living proof.
Yes.
Things can get better and things will get better. Just like now, oh my gosh, now I know is a completely different time for people growing up. I get it. Social media, the internet highway. Everything has changed. Everybody thinks they have to be something. They've got to have this many likes. They got to do this much stuff. And it's such a heavy burden, I think, for the younger generation to carry. And I worry about them. And I hope if anybody sees this, like, you are fine. You are doing fine. Like, just be you. You don't have to impress anybody or do anything. Like, I don't even know how to say it better. But, like, I really worry. It's such a debacle. The internet is the greatest and worst thing that was ever made. And I can't remember who said it. Einstein said it was going to be the downfall of us.
It is a double-edged sword.
Yeah, because, whoa, like, I can get on real time and walk with somebody from National Geographic into Petra.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my gosh. But then at the same time, somebody's going to get on there and, like, tell some girl or some guy that they're fat. Yeah. And, like, they need to do, like, it's just, it's so weird. It's weird. And, like, we've been, think about what we've been through.
Yeah.
Like,
could you imagine if that existed during our upcoming?
Thank God not.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. No.
Yeah.
Like, I think about, like, pictures of field parties or, yeah, like, whatever.
Thank Marino's, God there were no, like, cameras.
Oh,
no,
my
digital.
Gosh. Thank gosh we don't have pictures of
camera phones. Oh, my God. No, we actually had to handwrite notes and pass them in class.
And then later it was like, right. And then right. I hope it was good when it got, like, oh, my God.
Yes.
And we went through, like, I remember my parents having 8-tracks, but we saw 8-tracks and we went into cassettes. We saw the CDs. Vinyl's still kicking, like you said. But we've seen the evolution of downloading and, like, Spotify, like, yes, everything. So I feel like
we're in that unique. I was born in 77.
Yeah, 77. Yeah. I feel like we're just equipped a little bit better.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel this way. I'm not highly offended by anything, really. I mean, there's things, but, you know, that's just me.
Yeah.
But, like, other stuff, I'm always like, I'm just like, if that's how you feel, okay.
Can shrug it off, exactly.
It's nothing that's going to come home with me, like, unless you're a ghost.
I've learned to let go of a lot of that stuff. So things that I used to find so highly offensive years ago, I just roll off my shoulders
now.
And I'm just like, that's fine if you want to be ignorant. Like, I just take it like that.
Right,
you can't change anybody. No, it's not worth the argument.
You know, like, the world is in a crazy place now with politics all over the world. And if you can't sit down and have a decent conversation with your friend or family member or whatever about anything that you want to talk about, stop.
Right.
Your mental health, your relations with people, don't argue.
No,
don't.
It's not worth it.
Yeah, I tell people all the time. Easier said than done. I know that. But.
Well, you're in a great place. And I also wanted to commend you on, you recently got your degree. That's so exciting.
So happy.
Yeah.
History.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I did my associates. I finished up criminal justice. And then I did my degree in history. And
that is an amazing journey.
Awesome. And I did my senior thesis on lost cemeteries in Land Between the Lakes. It's a park in Kentucky, and there's over, like, 270 cemeteries in there. There's a whole story behind it. Look it up. And I got to go. I was out there, like, with the cemeteries, taking pictures, looking up dates, times, and I love it. But that's
so cool.
Me now.
Yeah.
If you would have said, hey, Veronica, at 21, do you want to go to the cemeteries? I'd be like, what? To drink beer and look for ghosts? Like, you know what I mean? Like, now I'm just like, yes. Like,
but even to go to school, like, out of high school for us, like, that was
never,
not
that
an option for me.
The worst idea.
I watched
in the
everybody
even
do that.
College, I would have.
Same.
Think, I think I took, like, an English class.
Right.
I
would have pissed on
that
experience.
That.
Yeah. It would have not been good for me. It would have been a waste of money.
I had no structure. I had nothing in place. And that didn't come from my family or friends. That
right.
was me.
It was, like, me too. Yeah, right. You know. I knew myself well enough to know that I was not ready for that experience.
Yes.
I just knew I wasn't.
I know.
I knew so many people that we went to school with that were ready for that.
Yeah.
Like, their sophomore year.
My sister.
Right.
She's so cool. Like, she graduated and went to Michigan State and got a degree.
Amazing.
She did it. And she had some tough times too, but she did it. How cool. I wouldn't have had that structure.
No,
I
had the party in me still. So, like, that's what time it was.
I just wanted to live in my apartment and go to concerts and drink beer. Labatt's Blue. That's all I wanted to do.
Yep. I was disciplined enough to work. I always worked. I always made money.
Because I knew I needed the money if I wanted to do these fun things.
Always worked. Always made money. That's never been an issue for me. I've always been, like, a rock star.
That's
I was
huge,
always
yep.
a rock star on play. All that. But there was no, there was
I think that helped too. Since we worked a lot, you know, we paid rent.
Yeah.
I paid car insurance.
Right.
I knew what this was, light bill or whatever. So when I went into the Air Force, to me, it was like, oh, I don't have to pay for any of this. But a lot of the people I was with were, like, 17, 18. They had never lived on their own.
Right.
So they would be, like, miserable about certain things. But in my mind, I'm like, I don't have to pay a light bill this month. I'm like, this is awesome. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm glad that I had that little time.
Yeah, absolutely. I had down here on my list of questions to ask you too.
Yes.
You are a big advocate for missing and murdered women in the service.
Yeah.
You
want to
talk a little bit about
that? So every branch, I mean, look up any true crime show, military murder podcast, like, things out there. There's cases that are still not solved.
Yeah.
And it's huge. And if you can just share and bring to light, we have so many advances now with everything.
Yeah.
What really started was Vanessa Guillen. And when that happened, and what happened to her was horrible, and it should have never happened. And I think it just woke everybody up even more. Like, hey, I don't know specifics on her situation. I can't speak for her. But that, like, hey, sexual assault does happen. Sexual advances happen. Harassment. And both to men and women.
Yeah.
We got to do something. I'm not saying her case was specifically, you know, but it made awareness. And I was so happy. Because I can't tell. I was never sexually assaulted in the military, any branch or anything. I dealt with sexism at a level that we're not just talking stupid jokes and stuff where you're like, whatever, dude. Like, I dealt with something when we got to Afghanistan that was horrible.
Wow.
Still have to deal with that. I'm still getting through that. I still look over my shoulder at Clarksville when we're there because I'm just like, is that person still here? I'm pretty sure he's gone or whatever, but I'm just like,
yeah.
That brought awareness, and I'm just really big about it. And unfortunately, like, there's still like a unsolved homicide now in Clarksville that just happened like last year of a female soldier off base and everything. But I think now, I hope now, the military branches are like, hey, if they come to you and they're like, yo, this is happening to me, that they take, my husband says they do. My husband's a master sergeant in the Army. And he says now when they come to us, like, it's a huge deal. It's stopped. And they go to the source and find out what's going on. Hope. I pray.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm huge about that. I'm in any unsolved case, like, is just, I don't know. Like right now there's the lady in Tulsa, Brittany Phillips' mom, Maggie. That case is still unsolved and we're at 20 something years. And like, she's working so hard though. She is like my hero. You know, these people that just don't give up.
Yeah.
Like, and then you want to be like, what can I do? What can I do? And that's just that double-edged sword, social media, internet. Great thing for that,
it's
right?
It's a great platform for that. So, yeah. Well, I appreciate your advocacy.
I got you.
Your advocacy for that. And your advocacy for animals too.
Yeah.
What associations are you affiliated with?
So in Clarksville, I don't have like a specific, we just help who we help, but in Louisiana, my friend Kelly, she has one called Blacklist Animal Rescue. She was in Leesville, Louisiana, but she's on my page, look her up or whatever. She's kind of like a one-woman show. I respect her so much. She does what she can down there. Louisiana doesn't have the best rap for that area with animals and stuff. She'll get the animal out, vetted, and vetted means like, you know, heartworm, whatever. And then we transport. Get them out of the South. Usually they come up to the North and live their best life in New York City.
That's amazing.
It's been a couple times, yeah. So that was huge. But Louisiana's where I found my dog rescue stuff. I didn't know, because I had Leroy.
Yeah.
And he was just bougie from the beginning. Like, he was fine. He had a great rescue. He had biological moms, I call them. And then I get to Louisiana to foster. I stepped up with an organization, Louisiana Lifelines, and that's when I got Abraham. And he was burnt and skinny.
Oh, my God.
And I was sick to myself. I didn't know this happened. I just was so unaware, and that's where it started.
Yep. Amazing.
So, yeah.
I'm going to have – you're in Tennessee – PB Siebert is in Tennessee. She's the founder of the Magic Mission.
Yeah.
Magicmission.org.
Yeah, and she's in Nashville, I think.
Yeah,
right?
she's in Nashville. Yeah. I'm going to have to connect you guys via email. That way, when they have events going on, you could link up.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Now, she had something to do with what you did. Didn't you go
to Mexico?
Bingo.
Yeah. She's got an event this week. It's Thursday in California. Kesha is headlining the event. It's for the Magic Mission.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, but that's out in California. Yeah. But she also does events in Nashville all the time. Like, I should have connected you to her last one.
Yeah, I'll have to go out there. Yep.
Yeah. You're so close.
Yeah, Nashville. Yeah.
And you're a rock star advocate for the animals, and so is she. And after spending time with her and just knowing you for as long as I have.
I love the people that head up these missions
like
her.
Oh, my God. She's a rock star.
A presence, and they take so much crap.
Yeah. I watched her literally shut down traffic in Mexico. We were going for a walk, and there was a puppy in the middle of the street, like just a wandering puppy, and boom. You know, because it's all over in Mexico.
Yeah.
And so there was a huge initiative that she was doing down there. And
that is awesome.
She shut down traffic, got that dog, like shut down a restaurant, like had all these people brought into the mix to save that puppy.
I love that.
Yeah, she's one of those.
And it's
she's
like
good.
With animals, like, I don't know about you, like I have this soft space for children, animals and the elderly. And the people our age, I know.
We
take care of each other and we figure it out. But
you're an old soul.
I step in, I help where I can help and like just hope that day made a difference. Just those couple hours maybe made a difference.
Absolutely.
You know?
I always find connecting with older folks so, I don't know
stories.
Why, comforting
it's
and therapeutic. The stories.
Tradition. Yes, I
you learn
love
so
it.
Much.
Yep.
And they know other people. They make connections for you.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It was so funny because I had a hamstring injury. I blew out a hamstring lifting weights years ago. Mm. It's like when I first started up my business and I started mall walking in the morning because
awesome.
I needed to do something.
Like, I'm gonna be here eventually. Let me just get used to it.
Yeah. And I knew if I went to the gym or if I did anything with workout equipment that I'd further injure it. So I was like, where can I go walk where I'm not gonna be tempted to do that? So I would like go at like the mall opens up at like 7 a.m. Mall walkers
That's
come in
awesome.
There. Yeah, and I started connecting with
That's
the seniors.
Awesome. They probably enjoyed it.
Oh,
too.
They did. Yeah. Yep. It was awesome. So that was cool. Like that was a great lead into making some connections in that community for me. So that was nice. But yeah, I love all walks of life, you know.
Oh my gosh, there's so much. If anybody, could just take the time and listen to somebody, you're going to find out
something. There it is.
You're going to learn a history, a story. They might just need to tell a story and get it off their chest.
Like, absolutely.
But listen, just be mindful and listen. And when you have a conversation with somebody, don't be like, well, don't make it about you.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
let's listen.
What do you have coming up? What's going on with you in the upcoming months?
Oh my
Anything
gosh.
Exciting?
So November, December is going to be kind of chill. So I am going to start school again in the beginning of January. I'm going to do an undergraduate certificate program for applied social science.
Wow.
It's cool because it's got like psychology, but I took it because it has a bunch of anthropology classes.
Beautiful.
Yes, that's what I want.
Now you're on a roll.
Yeah, and I can say it because my husband, you know, posted on his social media. It took his time to figure out what he was going to do, that he was diagnosed with the prostate cancer. With the prostate cancer. That sounds like the internet. And we are so lucky and blessed that we live where we live, because Nashville has Vanderbilt Institute, the Cancer Society.
Wow.
And they have like the best doctors. So we'll be dealing with that in a good way. It's going to work out. And so he's going to figure out what we need to do going forward with that. And then next year he retires. So by March, April, we'll be out. Like, we should be heading to Illinois. We've been looking at cities around there and stuff. So that's kind of it.
That's exciting. Yeah. I'd love to have you both on a podcast to talk about military life. And
Let's get him after he retires. Yeah. So he can be like,
yes, exactly. You know, I just had Sumit Ray on my podcast from Cancer Check Labs.
Okay.
I met this guy through Dave Asprey Biohacking Network at the Biohacking Conference. Dave had Sumit there, and he founded a business called, an organization called Cancer Check Labs. So cancerchecklabs.com.
Oh, wow.
And I, for that specific reason, I had had a few different friends my age diagnosed with prostate cancer and just different cancers.
Yeah.
And so what Cancer Check Labs does is they come to you. They're based in Texas, but they have like a phlebotomist that will come to you anywhere.
Okay.
So you link up with them, you give them your location, they come and they run a whole battery of cancer tests for you. Yeah, and then they send you your results.
I love that, like mobile healthcare.
It's mobile healthcare. Huge. Yeah, it was huge.
It gets more people, you know, because a lot of people can't make it there. They can't do this or, you know, whatever.
Well, we still think like we're fucking 20 and we're goddamn not.
Yeah. Every time I stand up or like I drove here, like I was like, oh.
Yeah. It's like, well, it's weird. The aging process for us, it's just.
This stays intact.
Exactly.
But everything else is like.
It's like, oh, you have to think about these things now, like health wise.
It's
like, oh, we've got to get checked out.
Your heart. I have healthcare that I use, the VA and through everything. Like, I stay up with my women's healthcare. Like, it's important. And I have these opportunities. I'm going to use them.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
But I've seen some of your guests and I'm just like, and they're just such good people.
Yeah.
So many good people doing so many good things.
Well, you primarily. Yeah.
Giant.
I'm so happy that you're here to share your stories. And I'm going to be so excited to have you back. And I have multiple thoughts for different
collaborations. I know, right? We can talk forever. There's so much stuff. We'll have to break it down. Like, let's talk about high school.
Yeah. My God. But coming to a close, I just want to say thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you look
so
just as beautiful as you ever
you
have.
Look
yes.
And Maria, that was just like a hug. Oh, so sweet, so kind.
Yes.
I love her.
I can't wait to wrap up so we can catch up more off camera.
Yeah.
Yes, get some B-roll. No, but thank you so much for coming and taking the time and making the trek. And you definitely have a place here at the studio anytime you want to come back.
Thank you.
Anytime you want to anytime you want to promote an initiative or anything that you have going on, you are welcome here anytime.
Appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Of course. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us today. Hit like and subscribe. That's a wrap.